wandering through a gallery of statues. But I won't have more time to explore. I have duties to fulfill. Duties, according to the king's chatting secretary, that apply to a whole range of evils beyond just reading the measures. As a future princess, I must meet the people in arranged outings, making speeches and shaking hands, and standing by Maven's side. The last part doesn't really bother me, but being put on parade like a goat at auction isn't exactly exciting. I join Maven in a transport, headed for the first appearance. I'm itching to tell him about the list and thank him for the blood base, but there are too many eyes and ears. The majority of the day speeds by in a blur of noise and color as we tour different parts of the capital. The bridge market reminds me of Grand Garden, though it's three times the size. In the single hour we spend greeting children and shopkeepers, I see the silvers assault or aggravate dozens of red servants, all trying to do their jobs. Security keeps them from all-out abuse, but the words they sling are almost as hurtful. Child killers, animals, devils. Maven keeps his grip tight on my hand, squeezing every time a red is knocked to the ground. When we reach our next stop, an art gallery, I'm glad to be out of the public eye, until I see the paintings. The silver artist uses two colors, silver and red, in a horrifying collection that makes me sick. Each painting is worse than the last, depicting silver strength and red weakness in every brushstroke. The last one depicts a gray and silver figure, quite like a ghost, and the crown on his brow bleeds crimson. It makes me want to put my head through a wall. The plaza outside the gallery is noisy, bustling with city life. Many stop to stare, gawking at us as we head for our transport. Maven waves with a practiced smile, causing the crowd to cheer his name. He's good at this. After all, these people are his birthright. When he stoops to speak with a few children, his smile brightens. Cal might be born to rule, but Maven was meant for it. And Maven is willing to change the world for us, for the reds he was raised to spit on. I surreptitiously touch the list in my pocket, thinking of the ones who can help Maven and me change the world. Are they like me, or are they as varied as the Silvers? Shade was like you. They knew about Shade and had to kill him, like they could not kill you. My heart aches for my fallen brother, for the conversations we might have had, for the future we might have forged. But Shade is dead, and there are others who need my help. We need to find Farley, I whisper in Maven's ear, barely audible to myself. But he hears me and raises an eyebrow in silent question. I have to give her something. I have no doubt she'll find us, he mutters back, if she isn't watching already. How? Farley, spying on us? Inside a city that wants her torn apart? It seems impossible. But then, I notice the silver crowd pressing in, and the red servants beyond. A few linger to watch us, their arms banded with red. Any one of them could work for Farley. They all could. Even with the sentinels and security all around, she's still with us. Now the question becomes finding the right red, saying the right thing, finding the right place, and doing it all without anyone noticing the prince and his future princess communicating with a wanted terrorist. This isn't like the crowds at home, the ones I could move through so easily. Now I stand out, a future princess, surrounded by guards, with a rebellion resting on her shoulders. And maybe even something more important, I think, remembering the list of names in my jacket. When the crowd pushes in, craning to look at us, I take my chance and slip away. The sentinels bunch around Maven, still not used to guarding me as well. And with a few quick turns, I'm out of the circle of guards and onlookers. They continue across the plaza without me, and if Maven notices I'm gone, he doesn't stop them. The red servants don't acknowledge me, their heads down as they buzz between shops. They keep to alleys and shadows, trying to stay out of sight. I'm so busy searching the red faces that I don't notice the one at my elbow. My lady, You dropped this, the little boy says. He's probably 10 years old, with one arm banded with red. My lady? Then I notice the scrap he holds out. It's nothing, just a twisted bit of paper I don't remember having. Still, I smile for the boy and take it from him. Thank you very much. He grins at me, smiling as only a child can, before bounding away into an alley. He bounces with every step. Life has not dragged him down yet. This way, Lady Titanos. A sentinel stands over me, watching with flat eyes. So much for that plan. I let him lead me back to the transport, feeling suddenly dejected. I can't even sneak away like I used to. I'm getting soft. What was that all about? Maven wonders as I slide back into the transport. Nothing, I sigh, casting a glance out the window as we pull away from the plaza. Thought I saw someone. We're around a bend in the street before I even think to look at the little paper. I unfold it in my lap, hiding the scrap in the folds of my sleeve. There are words scrawled across the slip, so small I can barely read them. Hexaprin Theater, afternoon play, the best seats. It takes me a moment to realize I only understand half those words, but that doesn't matter at all. Smiling, I press the message into Maven's hand. Maven's request is all it takes to get us into the theater. It's small but very grand, with a green domed roof crowned by a black swan. It's a place of entertainment, showing plays or concerts, or even some archive films on special occasions. A play, as Maven tells me, is when people, actors, perform a story on a stage. Back home, we didn't have time for bedtime fairy tales, let alone stages and actors and costumes. Before I know it, we're sitting on a closed balcony above the stage. The seats below us teem with people, many of them children, all of them silver. A few reds rove between the rows and aisles, serving drinks or taking tickets, but none sit down. This is not a luxury they can afford. Meanwhile, we sit on velvet chairs with the best view, with the secretary and the sentinels standing just beyond our curtained door. When the theater darkens, Maven throws an arm across my shoulders, pulling me so close I can feel his heartbeat. He smirks at the secretary, now peeking between the curtains. "Don't disturb us," he drawls, and he pulls my face to his. The door clicks behind us, locking shut, but neither of us pulls away. A minute or an hour passes, which I don't know, until voices on stage bring me back to reality. "Sorry," I mutter to Maven, standing up out of my chair in an effort to put some distance between us. There's no time for kissing now, no matter how much I might want to. He only smirks, watching me instead of the play. I do my best to look elsewhere, but something always draws my eyes back to him. "What do we do now?" He laughs to himself, eyes glinting mischievously. "That's not what I meant," but I can't help but smirk with him. Cal cornered me earlier. Maven's lips purse, tightening at the thought. "And?" "It seems I've been saved." His resulting grin could light the world entire, and I'm seized by the need to kiss him again. "I told you I would," he says, his voice oddly rough. When his hand reaches for mine, I take it without question. Before we can continue, the ceiling panel above us scrapes away. Maven jumps to his feet, more startled than I am, and peers into the black space above us. Not even a whisper filters down, but all the same, I know what to do. Training has made me stronger, and I pull myself up with ease, disappearing into the dark and cold. I can't see anything or anyone, but I'm not afraid. Excitement rules me now, and with a smile, I reach down a hand to help Maven. He scrambles up into the darkness and tries to get his bearings. Before our eyes adjust, the ceiling panel slides back into place, shutting out the light and the play and the people beyond. "Be quick and quiet. I'll take you from here." It's not the voice I recognize, but the smell. An overpowering mixture of tea, old spices, and a familiar blue candle. Will? My voice almost cracks. Will Whistle? Slowly, but surely, the darkness becomes easier to manage. His white beard, tangled as ever, comes into dim focus. There's no mistaking it now.
No time for reunions, little Barrow, he says. We have work to do.
How Will came to be here, traveling all the way from the stilts, I don't know. But his intimate knowledge of the theater is even more peculiar. He leads us through the ceiling, down ladders and steps and little trapdoors, all with the play echoing overhead. It's not long before we're below ground, with brick supports and metal beams stretching high above us. You people sure like to be dramatic, Maven mutters, eyeing the gloom around us. It looks like a crypt, dark and damp, where every shadow holds a horror. Will barely laughs as he shoulders open a metal door.
Just you wait!
We tramp through the narrow passage, sloping downward even farther. The air smells faintly of sewage. To my surprise, the path ends in a small platform, lit by only a burning torch. It casts strange shadows on a crumbling wall set with broken tiles. There are black markings on them, letters, but not from any language I can read. Before I can ask about them, a great screeching sound shakes the walls around us. It comes from a round hole in the wall, rumbling up from even greater darkness. Maven grabs my hand, startled by the sound, and I'm just as frightened as him. Metal scrapes on metal, an ear-splitting noise. Bright lights stream out of the tunnel, and I can feel something coming, something big and electric and powerful. A metal worm appears, coasting to a stop in front of us. The sides are raw metal, welded and bolted together, with slit-like windows. A door slides open on shrieking tracks, spilling a warm glow onto the platform. Farley smiles to us from a seat inside the door. She waves a hand, gesturing for us to join her.
All aboard!
The techies call it the undertrain, she says as we shakily take our seats. Remarkably fast, and it runs on the ancient tracks the Silvers never bothered to look for. Will shuts the door behind us, slamming us into what feels like nothing more than a long tin can. If I weren't so worried about the underthing crashing, I'd be impressed. Instead, I tighten my grip on the seat below me.
Where did you build this? Maven wonders aloud, his eyes sweeping over the wretched cage.
Greytown is controlled. The techies work for...
We have techies and tech towns of our own, little prince, Farley says, looking very proud of herself.
What you Silvers know about the god couldn't fill a teacup. The train lurches beneath us, almost tossing me from my seat, but no one else even bats an eye.
It slides along until it reaches a speed that smacks my stomach into my spine.
The others continue chattering, mostly Maven asking questions about the undertrain and the guard. I'm glad no one asks me to speak, because I'll certainly throw up or pass out if I do much more than sit still. But not Maven. Nothing gets by him. He glances out the window, gleaning something from the rock blurring past.
We're heading south.
Farley sits back in her seat, nodding.
Yes.
The south is radiated, he barks, staring down at her. She barely shrugs.
Where are you taking us? I murmur, finally finding my voice.
Maven doesn't waste any time, moving for the closed door. No one stops him because there's nowhere for him to go. No escape.
You know what it does? Radiation?
He sounds truly afraid. Farley begins to tick off the symptoms on her fingers, a maddening smile still on her face.
Nausea, vomiting, headache, seizures, cancerous diseases, and oh, yes, death. A very unpleasant death.
Suddenly I feel very sick.
Why are you doing this? We're here to help you. Mare, stop the train. You can stop the train.
Maven drops in front of me, grabbing me by the shoulders.
Stop the train!
To my surprise, The tin can squeals around us, coming to a very sharp and sudden stop. Maven and I tumble to the floor in a tangle of limbs, hitting the hard metal deck with a painful thunk. Lights beam down at us from the open door, revealing another platform lit by torches. It's much larger and leads far back out of sight. Farley steps over the pair of us without so much as a glance and trots onto the platform. "Aren't you coming?"
"Don't move, Mare. This place will kill us."
Something whines in my ears, almost drowning out Farley's cold laugh. As I sit up, I can see she's waiting patiently for both of us.
"How do you know the South, the ruins, are still radiated?"
she asks with a mad smile. Maven trips over the words.
"We have machines, detectors. They tell us."
Farley nods.
"And who built those machines?"
"Techies," Maven croaks.
"Reds."
Finally, he understands what she's getting at. The detectors lie. Grinning, Farley nods and extends a hand, helping him off the floor. He keeps his eyes on her, still wary, but allows her to lead us out onto the platform and up an iron set of stairs. Sunlight streams in from above, and fresh air swirls down to mix with the murky vapors of the underground. Then we're blinking in the open air, staring up at low-lying fog. Walls rise all around, supporting a ceiling that no longer exists. Only pieces of it remain, little bits of aquamarine and gold. As my eyes adjust, I can see tall shadows in the sky, their tops disappearing into the haze. The streets, wide black rivers of asphalt, are cracked and sprouting gray weeds 100 years old. Trees and bushes grow over concrete, reclaiming little pockets and corners, but even more have been cleared away. Shattered glass crunches under my feet, and clouds of dust drift in the wind. But somehow, this place, the picture of neglect, doesn't feel abandoned. I know this place from the histories, from the books and old maps. Farley puts an arm around my shoulders, her smile wide and white.
"Welcome to the City of Ruins, to Naersi," she says, using the old name forgotten long ago.
The ruined island contains special markers around the borders to trick the radiation detectors the Silvers use to survey the old battlefields. This is how they protect it, the home of the Scarlet Guard. In Norta, at least. That's what Farley said, hinting at more bases across the country. And soon it will be the sanctuary of every Red refugee fleeing the King's new punishments. Every building we pass looks decrepit, coated in ash and weeds, but upon closer inspection, there's something much more. Footprints in the dust, a light in a window, the smell of cooking wafting up from a drain. People, Reds, have a city of their own right here, hiding in plain sight. Electricity is scarce, but smiles are not. The half-collapsed building Farley leads us to must have been some kind of cafe once, judging by the rust-eaten tables and ripped-up booth seats. The windows have long since disappeared, but the floor is clean. A woman sweeps dust out the door, into neat piles on the broken sidewalk. I would be daunted by such a task, knowing that there is so much left to sweep away. But she carries on with a smile, humming to herself. Farley nods at the cleaning woman, and she hurries away, leaving us in peace. To my delight, the booth closest to us holds a familiar face. Killorn, safe and whole. He even has the audacity to wink. "Long time no see. There's no time to get cute," Farley growls, taking a seat next to him. She gestures for us to follow, and we do, sliding into the squeaky booth. "I take it you saw the villages on your cruise down the river?" My smile quickly fades, as does Killorn's.
"Yes.
And the new laws? I know you've heard about them."
Her eyes harden, like it's my fault I was forced to read the measures. "This is what happens when you threaten a beast," Maven mutters, jumping to my defense.
"But now they know our name.
Now they're hunting you," Maven snaps, bringing a fist down on the table.
It shakes the thin layer of dust, sending floating clouds into the air. You waved a red flag in front of a bull, but didn't do much more than poke at him.
They're frightened, though, I pipe in. They've learned to fear you. That has to count for something.
It counts for nothing if you slink back into your hidden city and let them regroup. You're giving the king and the army time. My brother is already on your trail, and it won't be long until he tracks you down.
Maven stares at his hands, strangely angry.
Soon, staying one step ahead won't be enough. It won't even be possible.
Farley's eyes glimmer in the light as she surveys us both, thinking. Killorn is content to draw circles in dust, seemingly unmoved. I fight the urge to kick him under the table, to make him pay attention.
I couldn't care less about my own safety, Prince, Farley says. It's the people in the villages, the workers and the soldiers, who I care about. They're the ones being punished right now, and harshly.
My thoughts fly to my family and the stilts, remembering the dull look in a thousand eyes as we passed.
What have you heard?
Nothing good. Killorn's head jerks up, though his fingers still swirl on the table. Double work shifts, Sunday hangings, mass graves. It's not pretty for the ones who can't keep up the pace.
He's remembering our village, just like I am. Our people at the war front say it isn't much different up there either. The 15 and 16-year-olds are being put into their own legion. They won't survive for long.
His fingers draw an X in the dust, angrily marking what he feels.
I can stall that, maybe, Maven says, brainstorming out loud. If I convince the war council to hold them back, put them through extra training.
That's not enough.
My voice is small but firm. The list seems to burn against my skin, begging to be let free. I turn to Farley.
You have people all over, don't you?
I don't miss the shadow of satisfaction cross her face.
I do.
Then give them these names. I pull Julian's book from my jacket, opening to the beginning of the list, and find them.
Maven gently takes the book, his eyes scanning over it.
There must be hundreds, he mutters, not looking away from the page.
What is this?
They're like me, red and silver, and stronger than both.
It's my turn to feel smug. Even Maven's jaw drops.
Farley snaps her fingers, and he hands it over without a thought, still staring at the little book that holds such a powerful secret.
It won't be long until the wrong person figures this out, though, I add.
Farley, you must find them first.
Killorn glares at the names like they offer him some kind of insult.
This could take months, years.
Maven huffs. We don't have that kind of time.
Exactly, Killorn agrees. We need to act now.
I shake my head. Revolutions cannot be rushed. But if you wait, if you find as many as you can, you could have an army.
Suddenly, Maven slaps the table, causing us all to jump.
But we do have one.
I have many under my command here, but not that many, Farley argues, looking at Maven like he's gone mad.
But he grins, alive with some hidden fire.
If I can get an army, a legion in Archeon, what could you do?
She just shrugs.
Very little, actually. The other legions would crush them on the field.
It hits me like a thunderbolt, and I finally realize what Maven is getting at.
But they won't fight on the field, I breathe.
He turns to me, smiling like a crazed loon.
You're talking about a coup.
Farley frowns.
A coup?
A coup. A coup d'etat. It's a history thing, a before thing, I explain, trying to wave off their confusion. It's when a small group quickly overthrows a large government. Sound familiar?
Farley and Killorn exchange glances, eyes narrowed.
Go on, she says.
You know the way Archeon's built, with the bridge, the west side, and the east side?
My fingers race along with my words, drawing a rough map of the city in the dust.
Now, the west side has the palace, command, the treasury, the courts, the entire government. And if somehow we can get in there, cut it off, get to the king, and make him agree to our terms, it's all over.
You said it yourself, Maven. You can run the whole country from Caesar Square. All we have to do is take it.
Under the table, Maven pats me on the knee. He's buzzing with pride. Farley's usual suspicious look is gone, replaced by real hope. She runs a hand over her lips, mouthing words to herself as she eyes the dust-drawn plan.
This might just be me, Killorn begins, falling back to his usual snide tone.
But I'm not exactly sure how you plan to get enough Reds in there to fight Silvers. You need 10 of us to bring down one of them. Not to mention there's the 5,000 Silver soldiers loyal to your brother, he glances at Maven, all trained to kill, all trying to hunt us down as we speak. I deflate, falling back against the seat.
That could be difficult.
Impossible. Maven brushes a hand over my dust map, wiping away West Archeon with a few strokes of his fingers. Legions are loyal to their generals, and I happen to know a girl who knows a general very well. When his eyes meet mine, all his fire is gone, replaced now by bitter cold. He smiles tightly.
You're talking about Cal, the soldier, the general, the prince, his father's son.
Again, I think of Julian, of the uncle Cal would kill for his twisted version of justice. Cal would never betray his country, not for anything. When Maven answers, it's matter of fact. We give him a hard choice.
I can feel Killorn's eyes on my face, weighing my reaction, and it's almost too much pressure to bear.
Cal will never turn his back on his crown, on your father. I know my brother. If it comes down to it, to saving your life or saving his crown, we both know what he will choose. Maven fires back.
He would never choose me.
My skin burns under Maven's gaze, with the memory of one stolen kiss. It was him who saved me from Evangeline. Cal, who saved me from escaping and bringing more pain upon myself. Cal, who saved me from conscription. I've been too busy trying to save others to notice how much Cal saves me. How much he loves me. Suddenly, it's very hard to breathe. Maven shakes his head. He will always choose you.
Farley scoffs. You want me to pin my entire operation, the entire revolution, on some teenage love story? I can't believe this.
Across the table, a strange look crosses Killorn's face. When Farley turns to him, looking for some kind of support, she finds none.
I can, he whispers, his eyes never leaving my face.
25. As Maven and I are driven across the bridge, heading back to the palace after our long day of handshakes and secret plans, I wish the dawn would begin tonight instead of tomorrow morning. I'm intensely aware of the rumble around us while we pass through the city. Everything pulses with energy, from the transports on the streets to the lights woven into steel and concrete. It reminds me of the moment in Grand Garden long ago, when I watched the nymphs play in a fountain or the greenies attend their flowers. In that instant, I found their world beautiful. I understand now why they want to keep it, to maintain their rule over all the rest, but that doesn't mean I'll let them. There's usually a feast to celebrate the king's return to his city, but in light of recent events, Caesar's Square is much quieter than it should be. Maven pretends to lament the lack of spectacle, if only to fill the silence. The banquet hall is twice the size of the one at the hall, he says as we enter the great gates. I can see part of Cal's legion, drilling at the barracks, 1,000 of them marching in time. Their steps beat like a drum. We used to dance until dawn. At least Cal did. Girls didn't ask me to dance much. Not unless Cal made them.
I would ask you to dance, I murmur back to him, my eyes still on the barracks. Will they be ours tomorrow?
Maven doesn't answer, shifting in his seat as we coast to a stop.
He will always choose you.
I feel nothing for Cal, I whisper in his ear, as we clamber out of the transport. He smiles, his hand closing around mine, and I tell myself it's not a lie. When the doors to the palace open to us, a wretched scream twists through the long marbled passages. Maven and I exchange glances, startled. Our guards bristle, hands straying to their guns, but they aren't enough to stop me from bolting. Maven keeps up as best he can, trying to match my pace. The scream sounds again, accompanied by a dozen marching feet and the familiar clank of armor. I break into a dead sprint, Maven right behind me. We burst into a round chamber, a council hall of polished marble and dark wood. There's already a crowd, and I almost collide with Lord Samos himself. But my feet stop me just in time. Maven slams into my back, nearly knocking us over. Samos sneers at both of us, his black eyes cold and hard. "My lady, Prince Maven," he says, barely inclining his head to either of us. "Have you come to see the show?"
The show.
There are other lords and ladies around us, along with the king and queen, all staring straight ahead. I push through them, not knowing what I'll find on the other side, but I know it won't be good. Maven follows, his hand never leaving my elbow. When we reach the front of the crowd, I'm glad for his warm hand, a comfort to keep me quiet and to pull me back. No less than 16 soldiers stand in the center of the chamber, their booted feet tracking dirt over the great crown seal. Their armor is the same, scaled black metal, except for one with reddish glint. Cal. Evangeline stands with him, her hair pulled back into a braid. She breathes heavily, winded, but looks proud of herself. And where there's Evangeline, her brother cannot be far behind. Ptolemus appears from the back of the pack, dragging a screaming body by her hair. Cal turns away and meets my eyes the moment I recognize her. I can see regret there, but he does nothing to save her. Ptolemus tosses Walsh to the polished floor, her face smashing against the rock. She barely spares a glance at me before turning her pained eyes on the king. I remember the playful, smiling servant who first introduced me to this world. That person is gone.
"The rats crawl in the old tunnels," Ptolemus snarls, turning her over with his foot.
She scrambles away from his touch, surprisingly quick for her many injuries.
"We found this one trailing us near the river holes."
Trailing them? How could she be so stupid? But Walsh isn't stupid. No, this was an order, I realize with growing horror. She was watching the train tunnels, making sure the way was clear for us to get back from Naersee. And while we made it through safely, she did not. Maven's grip on my arm tightens, pulling me into him until his chest lies flush to my back. He knows I want to run to her, to save her, to help her. And I know we can't do anything at all.
"We went as far as the radiation detectors would allow," Cal adds, trying his best to ignore Walsh coughing up blood. "The tunnel system is huge, much larger than we originally thought. There must be dozens of miles in the area, and the Scarlet Guard know them better than any of us."
King Tiberius scowls beneath his beard. He gestures at Walsh, waving her forward. Cal seizes her by the arm, pulling her toward the king. A thousand different tortures fill my head, each one worse than the last. Fire, metal, water, even my own lightning could be used to make her talk.
"I will not make the same mistake again," the king growls into her face. "Ilara, make her sing, right now."
"With pleasure," the queen replies, freeing her hands from her trailing sleeves. This is worse. Walsh will talk. She'll implicate us all. She'll ruin us. And then they'll kill her slowly. They'll kill us all, slowly. An Igri in the crowd of soldiers, an eye with the ability of foresight, suddenly jumps forward.
"Stop her! Hold her arms!"
But Walsh is faster than his vision.
"For Tristan!"
she says, before slamming a hand to her mouth. She bites down on something and swallows, knocking her head back.
"A healer!"
Cal snaps, grabbing her throat, trying to stop her. But her mouth foams white, and her limbs twitch. She's choking.
"A healer! Now!"
She seizes violently,
twisting out of his grip with the last of her strength. When she hits the floor, her eyes are wide open, staring but not seeing. Dead. For Tristan. I can't even mourn her.
A suicide pill.
Cal's voice is gentle, like he's explaining this to a child. But I suppose I am a child when it comes to war and death. We give them to officers on the line, and our spies. If they're captured, they won't talk, I spit back at him. Careful, I warn myself. As much as his presence makes my skin crawl, I have to endure it. After all, I let him find me here on the balcony. I must give him hope. I must let him think he has a chance with me. That part was Maven's idea, as much as it hurt him to say so. As for me, it's hard to walk the narrow line between a lie and the truth, especially with Cal. I hate him. I know that. But something in his eyes and his voice reminds me that my feelings aren't so simple. He keeps his distance, standing an arm's length away.
It's a better death than she would get from us.
Would she be frozen, or maybe burned for a change of pace?
No. He shakes his head. She would go to the bowl of bones.
He raises his eyes from the barracks, looking across the river. On the far side, nestled among the high-rises, is a massive oval arena with spikes around the rim in a violent crown. The bowl of bones.
She'd be executed in a broadcast as a message to all the rest.
I thought you didn't do that anymore. I haven't seen one in over a decade. I barely remember those broadcasts from when I was a little girl, years ago.
Exceptions can be made. The arena fights haven't stopped the guard from taking hold. Maybe something else will.
You knew her, I whisper, trying to find just one shred of regret in him. You sent her to me after we first met. He crosses his arms, like that can somehow protect him from the memory.
I knew she came from your village. I thought that might help you adjust a little.
I still don't know why you cared. You didn't even know I was different. A moment passes in silence, broken only by the bark of lieutenants far below, still drilling, even as the sun sets. You were different to me, he finally murmurs. I wonder what could have been if all this, I gesture to the palace and the square beyond, wasn't between us. Let him chew on that. He puts a hand on my arm, his fingers hot through the fabric of my sleeve. But that can never be, Cal. I force as much longing as I can into my eyes, relying on the memory of my family, Maven, Killorn, all the things we're trying to do. Maybe Cal will mistake my feelings, give him hope where none should be. It's the cruelest thing I can do, but for the cause, for my friends, for my life, I will. Mare, he breathes, dipping his head toward me. I turn away, leaving him on the balcony to think on my words, and hopefully, drown in them. I wish things were different, he whispers, but I can still hear him. The words take me back to my home and my father when he said the same thing so long ago. To think that Cal and my father, a broken red man, can share the same thoughts, makes me pause. I can't help looking back, watching the sun dip behind his silhouette. He stares down at the training army before looking back to me, torn between his duty and whatever he feels for the little lightning girl. Julian says you're like her, he says quietly, eyes thoughtful. Like she used to be. Corianne, his mother. The thought of the dead queen, a person I never knew, somehow makes me sad. She was taken too soon from those she loved, and she left a hole they're trying to make me fill. And as much as I hate to admit it, I can't blame Cal for feeling caught between two worlds. After all, so am I. Before the ball, I was anxious, a bundle of nerves dreading the night to come. Now I can't wait for dawn. If we win in the morning, the sun will set on a new world. The king will throw down his crown, passing his power to me, Maven, and Farley. The shift will be bloodless, a peaceful transition from one government to the next. If we fail, the bowl of bones is all I can hope for. But we will not fail. Cal will not let me die, and neither will Maven. They are my shields. When I lie down in my bed, I find myself staring at Julian's map. It's an old thing, practically useless, but still comforting. It's proof the world can change. With that thought in my head, I drift into a restless, light sleep. My brother visits me in my dreams. He stands by the window, looking at the city with a strange sorrow, before turning back to me. "There are others," he says. "You must find them." "I will," I murmur back to him, my voice heavy with sleep. Then it's 4 o'clock in the morning, and I have no more time for dreams. The cameras fall like trees before the axe, each little eye clicking off as I walk to Maven's room. I jump at every shadow, expecting an officer or a sentinel to step out into the hall, but no one does. They protect Cal and the king, not me, not the second prince. We don't matter, but we will. Maven opens his door a second after I jiggle the handle, his face pale in the darkness. There are circles beneath his eyes, like he hasn't slept at all, but he looks sharp as ever. I expect him to take my arm, to envelop me in his warmth, but there's nothing but cold dripping off him. He's afraid, I realize. We're outside in a few agonizing minutes, walking in the shadows behind War Command, to wait at our place between the structure and the outer wall. Our spot is perfect. We're able to see the square and the bridge, with most of War Command's gilded roof blocking us from the patrols. I don't need a clock to know we're right on time. Above us, the night fades, giving way to dark blue. The dawn is coming. At this hour, the city is quieter than I ever thought possible. Even the patrol guards are drowsy, slowly moving from post to post. Excitement trills through me, making my legs shake. Somehow, Maven keeps still, barely even blinking. He stares through the diamond glass wall, always watching the bridge. His focus is staggering. "They're late," he whispers, never moving. "I'm not." If I didn't know any better, I'd think Farley was a shadow, able to shift in and out of visibility. She seems to melt out of the semi-darkness, pulling herself up from a drain. I offer her my hand, but she pushes herself to her feet alone. "Where are the others?" "Waiting," she gestures to the ground below. If I squint, I can just see them, crowded into the drain system, about to retake the surface. I want to climb into the tunnel with them, to stand with Killorn and my kind. But my place is here, next to Maven. "Are they armed?" Maven's lips barely move. "Are they ready to fight?" Farley nods. "Always, but I'm not calling them out until you're sure the square's ours. I don't put much faith in Lady Barrow's ability to charm." "Neither do I, but I can't say that out loud." "He will always choose you. I've never wanted anything to be right and yet wrong at the same time." "Killorn wanted you to have this," she adds, holding out her hand. "In it is a tiny green stone, the color of his eyes. An earring. He said you'd know what it means." I choke on my words, feeling a great surge of emotion. Nodding, I take the earring from her and raise it to the others. "Bree, Traymi, Shade. I know each stone and what they mean. Killorn is a warrior now, and he wants me to remember him as he was, laughing, teasing me, sniffing around like a lost puppy. I will never forget that." The sharp metal stings, drawing blood. When I pull my hand back from my ear, I can see the crimson stain on my fingers. "This is who you are." I look back to the tunnel, hoping to see his green eyes, but the darkness seems to swallow the tunnel whole, hiding him and all the others. "Are you ready for this?" Farley breathes, looking between us both. Maven answers for me, his voice firm. "We are." But Farley isn't satisfied. "Mare?" "I'm ready." The revolutionary takes a calming breath before tapping her foot against the side of the drain. Once, twice, three times. Together, we turn to the bridge, waiting for the world to change. There's no traffic at this hour, not even the whisper of a transport. The shops are closed, the plaza's empty. With any luck, the only thing lost tonight will be concrete and steel. The last section of the bridge, the one connecting West Archeon to the rest of the city, seems serene. And then it explodes in bright plumes of orange and red, a sun to split the silver darkness. Heat surges, but not from the bombs. It's Maven. The explosion sparks something in him, lighting his flame. The sound rumbles, almost knocking me off my feet, and the river below churns as the end section of the bridge collapses. It groans and shudders like a dying beast, crumbling in on itself as it detaches from the bank and the rest of the structure. Concrete pillars and steel wire crack and snap, splashing into the water or against the bank. A cloud of dust and smoke rises, cutting off the rest of Archeon from view. Before the bridge even hits the water, alarms sound over the square. Above us, patrols run along the wall, eager to get a good look at the destruction. They shout to one another, not knowing what to make of this. Most can only stare. In the barracks, lights switch on, and soldiers stir, all 5,000 of them jumping out of bed. Cal's soldiers. Cal's legion. And with any luck, ours. I can't tear my eyes away from the flame and smoke, but Maven does it for me. "There he is," he hisses, pointing to some dark shapes running from the palace. He has his own guards, but Cal outstrips them all, sprinting for the barracks. He's still in his nightclothes, but he's never looked so fearsome. As soldiers and officers spill out into the square, he barks orders, somehow making himself heard over the growing crowd.
"Guns on the gates! Put nymphs on the other side! We don't want the fire spreading!"
His men carry out the orders with speed, jumping at his every word. Legions obey their generals. Behind us, Farley presses herself back against the wall, inching closer to her drain. She'll turn and run at the first sign of trouble, disappearing to fight another day. That won't happen. This will work. Maven moves to go first, to wave down his brother, but I push him back. "I have to do it," I whisper, feeling a strange sort of calm come over me. "He will always choose you." I'm past the point of no return when I step into the square, into full view of the Legion and the patrols and Cal. Spotlights blaze to life on the tops of the walls, some pointed at the bridge, others down on us. One seems to go right through me, and I have to raise a hand to shield my eyes.
"Cal!"
I scream over the deafening sound of 5,000 soldiers. Somehow, he hears me, his head snapping in my direction. We lock eyes through the mass of soldiers falling into their practiced lines and regiments. When he moves toward me, pushing through the sea, I think I might faint. Suddenly, all I can hear is my heartbeat pounding in my ears, drowning out the alarms and the screams. I am afraid, so very afraid. "This is just Cal," I tell myself. "The boy who loves music and cycles. Not the soldier, not the general, not the prince. The boy. He will always choose you."
"Go back inside, now!"
He towers over me, using the stern, regal voice that could make a mountain bow.
"Mare, it's not safe!"
With strength I never knew I had, I grab onto the collar of his shirt, and somehow it keeps him still. What if that was the cost? I toss a glance back to the broken bridge, now shrouded in smoke and ash. Nothing but a few tons of concrete.
What if I told you that right here, right now, you could fix everything? You could save us.
By the flicker in his eyes, I can see I have his attention.
"Don't,"
he protests weakly, one hand grabbing mine. There's fear in his eyes, more fear than I've ever seen.
"You said you believed in us once, in freedom, in equality. You can make that real with one word. There won't be a war. No one will die."
He seems frozen by my words, not daring to breathe. I can't tell what he's thinking, but I press on. I must make him understand. You hold the power right now. This army is yours. This whole place is yours to take and to free. March into the palace, make your father kneel, and do what you know is right. Please, Cal. I can feel him beneath my hands, his breath coming in quick pants, and nothing has ever felt so real or so important. I know what he's thinking about, his kingdom, his duty, his father, and me, the little lightning girl, asking him to throw it all away. Something deep down tells me he will. Shaking, I press a kiss to his lips. He will choose me. His skin feels cold under mine, like a corpse. Choose me, I breathe against him. Choose a new world. Make a better world. The soldiers will obey you. Your father will obey you. My heart clenches, and every muscle tightens, waiting for his answer. The spotlight on us flickers under my strength, switching on and off with every heartbeat. It was my blood in the cells. I helped the guard escape, and soon everyone will know and they will kill me. Don't let them. Save me. The words stir him, and his grip on my wrist tightens. It was always you. He will always choose you. Greet the new dawn, Cal. With me, with us. His eyes shift to Maven now, walking toward us. The brothers lock eyes, speaking in a way I don't understand. He will choose us. It was always you, he says again, ragged and ruined this time. His voice carries the pain of 1,000 deaths, 1,000 betrayals. Anyone can betray anyone, I remember. The escape, the shooting, the power outages. It all started with you. I try to explain, still pulling back, but he has no intention of letting me go. How many people have you killed with your dawn? How many children? How many innocents? His hand grows hot, hot enough to burn. How many people have you betrayed? My knees buckle, dropping out from under me. But Cal doesn't let go. Dimly, I hear Maven yelling somewhere, the prince charging in to save his princess. But I'm not a princess. I'm not the girl who gets saved. As the fire rises in Cal, flaming behind his eyes, the lightning streaks through me, fed by anger. It shocks between us, throwing me back from Cal. My mind buzzes, clouded by sorrow and anger and electricity. Behind me, Maven yells. I turn just in time to see him shouting back at Farley, gesturing wildly with his hands. Run! Run! Cal jumps to his feet, faster than me, shouting something to his soldiers. His eyes follow Maven's call, connecting the dots as only a general can. The drains! He roars, still staring at me. They're in the drains! Farley's shadow disappears, trying to escape while gunfire follows her. Soldiers dart over the square, ripping away grates and drains and pipes, exposing the system beneath. They pour into the tunnels like a terrible flood. I want to cover my ears, to block out the screams and bullets and blood. Killorn. His name flutters weakly in my thoughts, no more than a whisper. I can't think about him long. Cal still stands over me, his whole body shaking. But he doesn't frighten me. I don't think anything can scare me now. The worst has happened already. We have lost.
How many?
I scream back at him, finding the strength to face him.
How many starved? How many murdered? How many children taken away to die? How many, my prince?
I thought I knew hate before today. I was wrong. About myself, about Cal, about everything. The pain makes my head spin, but somehow I keep my feet. Somehow I keep myself from falling. He will never choose me. My brother, Killorn's father, Tristan, Walsh. What feels like 100 names explode from me, rattling off all the lost ones. They mean nothing to Cal, but everything to me. And I know there are thousands, millions more, 1,000,000 forgotten wrongs. Cal doesn't answer, and I expect to see the rage I feel reflected in his eyes. Instead, I see nothing but sadness. He whispers again, and the words make me want to fall down and never get up again. I wish things were different. I expect the sparks. I expect lightning. But it never comes. When I feel cold hands on my neck and metal shackles on my wrists, I know why. Instructor Arvin, the silence, the one who can make us human, stands behind me, pushing down all my strength until I'm nothing but a weeping girl again. He's taken it all away, all the strength and all the power I thought I had. I have lost. When my knees give out this time, there's no one to hold me up. Dimly, I hear Maven cry out before he too is pushed to the ground.
Brother!
He roars, trying to make Cal see what he's doing.
They'll kill her! They'll kill me!
But Cal is no longer listening to us. He speaks to one of his captains, and I don't bother to listen to the words. I couldn't even if I wanted to. The ground beneath me seems to shake with every round of gunfire deep below. How much blood will stain the tunnels tonight?
Me!
But Cal is no longer listening to us. He speaks to one of his captains, and I don't bother to listen to the words. I couldn't even if I wanted to. The ground beneath me seems to shake with every round of gunfire deep below. How much blood will stain the tunnels tonight? My head is too heavy, my body too weak, and I let myself slump against the tiled ground. It feels cold under my cheek, soothing and smooth. Maven pitches forward, his head landing next to me. I remember a moment like this. Geese's scream and the shattering of bones echo faintly, a ghost inside my head.
Take them inside, to the king. He will judge them both.
I don't recognize Cal's voice anymore. I've turned him into a monster. I forced his hand. I made him choose. I was eager. I was stupid. I let myself hope. I am a fool. The sun begins to rise behind Cal's head, framing him against the dawn. It's too bright, too sharp, and too soon. I have to shut my eyes.
26. I can barely keep up the pace, but the soldier at my back, holding my shackled arms, keeps shoving. Another does the same to Maven, forcing him along with me. Arvin follows us, making sure we can't escape. His presence is a dark weight, dulling my senses. I can still see the passage around us, empty and far from the prying eyes of the court, but I don't have the strength to care. Cal leads the pack, his shoulders tense and tight as he fights the urge to look back. The sound of gunfire and screams and blood in the tunnels rumbles in my mind. They are dead. We are dead. It is over. I expect us to descend, to march down to the darkest cell in the world. Instead, Cal leads us up, to a room with no windows and no sentinels. Our footfalls don't even echo as we enter. Soundproof. No one can hear us. And that frightens me more than the guns, or the fire, or the pure rage rippling off the king. He stands in the center of the room, dressed in his own gilded armor, with the crown on his head. His ceremonial sword hangs at his side again, along with a pistol he's probably never used. All part of the pageant. At least he looks the part. The queen is here as well, waiting for us in nothing but a thin white gown. The moment we enter, her eyes meet mine, and she forces her way into my thoughts like a knife through flesh. I yelp, trying to clutch my head, but the shackles hold firm. It all flashes before my eyes again, from the beginning to the end. Will's wagon, the guard, Killorn, the riots, the meetings, the secret messages. Maven's face swirls in the memories, making him stand out against the fray, but Ilara pushes him away. She doesn't want to see what I remember about him. My brain screams at the onslaught, jumping from thought to thought, until my whole life, every kiss and every secret, is laid bare before her. When she stops, I feel dead.